Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
We've been hearing Johnson & Johnson is delaying the rollout of its COVID-19 vaccine in Europe after US authorities suspended the use of the shot due to a small number of rare blood clot events. This comes as the first deliveries of the single dose jab were expected across Europe this week, with Ireland scheduled to receive 40,000 doses this month and over 600,000 up to the end of June. The Janssen vaccine is similar to AstraZeneca. Both are adenovirus based shots. In a moment, we'll hear from immunologist Luke O'Neill. But first, I want to speak to Stefan de Keersmaeker, who's a European Commission spokesperson for health. Stefan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Now, just yesterday, you were quoted as saying that the first doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine were leaving warehouses for member states. Mm-hmm. And now this afternoon, we hear that they're delaying the rollout to Europe. This must have come as a surprise to you.
You will understand that I cannot at this stage already comment on these new elements. The fact that the company has announced that it would postpone, I would say, the deliveries of the vaccines. We are looking into this, of course, and we'll see how to respond.
When did the Commission first hear about it, Stefan?
Well, again, we are always in contact with all the companies, and we have contracts with several companies. And one of the most important things for us is that we make sure that deliveries indeed can take place. And this is one of the reasons why we are in ongoing contact with all the companies for all the deliveries. Yeah,
can we just speak about Johnson & Johnson specifically for just a moment? When did you hear about that they were pausing delivery of the vaccines to Europe? And was this a unilateral decision by the company, or was it done in conjunction with the European Union?
No, listen, as I said, I'm really not in a position to enter into this at this stage. We are aware of the announcement that has been made by the company. We are aware that the American authorities are planning to pause the deliveries. So we are looking into it and follow the situation as we always do.
It seems to me that when you say you are aware of it, that this is a decision that was made unilaterally.
Listen, again, I'm afraid, as I said before, that Johnson & Johnson is one of the companies with whom we have contracts. Let's not forget that we have always followed a portfolio approach, meaning that we have contracts with different companies, with different technologies, to make sure that we have different types of vaccines and to make sure that when...
And the contract states that they deliver vaccines yesterday and today. Isn't that right, to the European Union?
No, what we announced yesterday, or what we said yesterday, was that trucks left the warehouses for deliveries to the member states.
Are they going to be delivering vaccines on time then?
I can only say that what the purpose of the deliveries was that the company would deliver 55 million doses for the third quarter. This is part of a delivery of 360 million doses that we expect for the second quarter. And we will look into this, of course.
Are they not more date specific, though?
I'm sorry?
Is the contract not more date specific?
Well, we have, as is the case with each contract, we see how many doses have to be delivered per month or per quarter in most cases. Mm-hmm. And these are the figures that we, of course, follow up closely with member states.
Okay, so will this unilateral pause by Johnson & Johnson to the supply of the vaccine to the European Union, will that delay the supply of the vaccine or will it comply with the contract?
Listen, again, I cannot comment on this situation. We are looking into the matters and we will react, of course, as soon as possible. What I can say is that we always knew that the delivery, or rather the production and delivery of vaccines, was going to be a challenge. This is a process that normally takes 10 years, by the way, and which is one of the reasons why we have contracts with different companies in our portfolio approach. And what we are focused on is to have contacts to make sure with all the companies with whom we have contracts that deliveries take place of sufficient number of vaccines to which the European citizens are entitled.
Okay, I'll move on in just a second, but just once more, when you say I'm going to look into it, and all you can say, do you know if they're complying with the contract, or is it something that you're just not sure about at the moment?
Listen, again, as I said, this announcement has been made right now, has been made some few hours ago. Allow us to give
everybody I understand.
A little bit of time to,
to look at the contract again. The EMA, the regulator, they said on Friday that they were investigating the cases, these rare blood clot events. It's six cases, isn't that right, out of 7 million jabs? So it is extremely rare. When do you expect the EMA to have more information for us?
Listen, this is something, the EMA is an independent agency. The Commission is not there to say to EMA when which decision has to be taken. The EMA is an agency which is independent, whose task it is to check the efficiency and the effectiveness, rather, and the safety of the vaccine. EMA is looking into this, definitely. They are investigating, and they are I'm pretty sure, working very hard to make sure that there is a very good scientific assessment of the situation.
If there is an elongated pause on the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and we know that there is a pause of sorts as well with the AstraZeneca vaccine as well, does the European Union have a contingency plan?
Listen, let us not speculate on scenarios. I think it is all clear the direction that we want to follow. We have received 108 million doses in the first quarter. And the objective is to have 360 million doses in the second quarter, which would allow us to ensure the vaccination of 70% of the adult population of the European citizens. This is what we're working towards. That's the objective, that's the focus, and that's what we will try to reach.
We don't want to speculate without question. But the businesses that are contacting us want certainty. And the question that I have for you is, will they get certainty in terms of the vaccination program so they can have a knock-on effect, and they can we can all lift restrictions and people can go back and go about their daily lives and do business? The question I have for you is, if there is a huge hole in the supply line of vaccines to the European Union because of all of this, are we going to meet our 55 million doses target due between this month and the end of June?
Listen, the work of the companies, the work of the Commission, and the work of the member states, because this really is a joint work between Commission and member states, is to make sure that we can reach our targets, our vaccination targets.
Are we on
That's
track?
That's what we're focused on. How are we on the basis of the deliveries that we expect for the second quarter, we should be in a position to reach the 70% target. Let us now see. We remain in contact with the different companies. Mm-hmm. Let's work towards this this objective.
Okay, but am I right in saying you don't know, you're not sure yet if you're on track or not to reach that target?
I did not say that. I'm saying that we are all, member states and Commission, very much aware of the importance of the vaccination of our European citizens, and that's what we're absolutely focusing all our work on.
Okay, Stefan de Keersmaeker, thank you very much indeed. European Commission spokesperson for health. Thank you for giving us the information you have at the moment. I'll speak now to Professor Luke O'Neill, who's a professor, of course, at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College Dublin. Luke, you're very welcome to the programme. We're just digesting NIAC's decision about AstraZeneca, and now this news about Johnson & Johnson. Are you worried?
It's a busy day for vaccines, as ever, Cormac, isn't that so that way? You know, well, we kind of saw this coming. There was a risk of J&J having some kind of a pause, because there have been reports of four deaths already with this very strange clotting disorder, extremely rare, as you point out. So I'm not that surprised, actually, now the spotlight is on J&J. And the US have jumped first, of course. The FDA have said pause it. And now in Europe, it's going to be delayed as well. So I guess it's a bit the same. It's the same as AstraZeneca, really, Cormac, in the sense that they're very similar vaccines, you see. They're in the same, what's called, it's a class effect, they think this is. Mm-hmm. They're both adenoviral vector vaccines, very similar. So there is something going on with them. Extremely rare. I mean, the numbers are, as you know, are ridiculously rare in many ways. So many people are questioning the wisdom in pausing all these, because these events are so rare. I've no doubt the J&J one will come back, you see, once they've analysed the data, but there's a good chance of that.
Yeah. We've seen, because of what happened with AstraZeneca, anecdotally, that some people are a little bit more hesitant about taking that vaccine, despite the rarity of the events and despite the relative safety compared to getting COVID itself. Do you think then, dare I say it, could this be an overreaction by the FDA and by European agencies to suspend the use of Johnson or supply of Johnson & Johnson and to restrict the use of AstraZeneca?
I think it has to be safety first, obviously, with any new medicine or new vaccine. Safety is uppermost in people's minds, number one. There's a frenzy of attention on these vaccines, isn't there? Let's face it. Every move they make is being scrutinized. So I suspect that's part of the reason why they've done this in a way. But again, you've got to reassure people and say the risk is tiny of anything happening with either of these vaccines, you see. As you know, it's 1 in 4 million chance, say, of having a serious event if you're over 55. You've got a fivefold increased risk of dying in a car crash, for instance. You know, so they're tiny, tiny risks. But I suppose it's the times we live in, Cormac, in a sense. You've never seen such an attention on anything before. And you've never seen such a massive medical campaign before. I mean, there's hundreds of millions of people being vaccinated as we speak, you see. So I guess this is giving rise to a, should we say, a rather heated environment. And as I say, we're all confident we will still see these vaccines being used.
But the problem here, Luke, is statistically, on a macro level, the events can be rare. And that's probably for you or government agencies or whatever who want to roll out the vaccine. But from an individual point of view, if the outcome can be deadly, then you can understand people's fear, can't you?
You can, of course, and I understand the fear and the anxiety and the consternation this is causing. And as I say, all we can say today is if you're over 60, take the AstraZeneca vaccine, because the risk of being harmed by the virus far outweighs any risk from this vaccine you see.
But people are perplexed, Luke, because if you're 59, don't take it. If you're 61, take it. I mean, what's the logic there?
I get it. And some countries are saying under 55 shouldn't, you know, and under 50. So these ages move around a bit. 60 is certainly a very conservative approach, you know, because they're deciding to do the cutoff at 60 years of age. The hope is, Cormac, that remember that there'll be other vaccines there to make up the deficit, if you will. In America, this Johnson & Johnson vaccine, that's only about 5% of the American total supply. They've loads of Pfizer and Moderna, so it won't impact on them as much, you see. Europe is different. We're depending on J&J and AstraZeneca more. So I'm hoping that lots of supply will come down the track from many different vaccine manufacturers. It'll be a short-term problem.
But do you reckon then, I mean, we've seen something like this, and I don't know enough of the science to say that there's a correlation between what we're seeing with AstraZeneca and what we're seeing with the Johnson & Johnson vaccines. We know that they're adenovirus-based vaccines. Yeah. Is there something in particular about that type of vaccine that we should be more careful with?
No, it's unexpected. I mean, you never see these things until you go into millions of people, remember, because you need an awful lot of people to reveal 1 in 4 million, and these specific types of vaccines are triggering this response. The important thing to say, Cormac, is they now know what's causing it. It's an autoimmune reaction to your own platelets. Now, platelets are very important for clots, you see, and your body begins to reject the platelets in a kind of strange way. And what that means is it could be treatable. There's a thing called IVIG, which can be used to treat these autoimmune reactions. So I suspect what will happen is the label will be put on the vaccine, saying there's a risk of this, tiny risk, and then they'll have IVIG available just in case people develop symptoms, even though they're very rare.
Is there a specific cohort of person then, based on gender or age or underlying condition or whatever the case may be, that you can class as a category of people who should be given that follow-up treatment or should avoid this type of vaccine?
That's a work in progress. The EMA are putting a huge amount of effort into trying to find out what's going on here. They're examining all these people very carefully to see what they have in common. As you say, can you see something common between them? At the moment, all they have in common is the vaccine, hence the phrase, this is the possible connection to it. What's very important is if people develop symptoms, they go and see their GP. The kind of symptoms is like a severe headache, abdominal pain, shortness of breath a few days after the first shot you see, then you know that something may be untoward. Extremely rare, though. Most GPs in Ireland wouldn't see a single case of this in their whole lifetime. That's how rare it is, you know. But again, I suppose the good part is there will be a treatment for it, you know, and I suspect at the moment they're working up these protocols to make sure these treatments would be in place.
A listener has a question here. What can the EMA do about this, though? The cases are in the US, hasn't been administered in Europe. But we're told they're looking at similar data to the FDA, isn't that right?
Yeah, well, they're very careful. The EMA, anything adverse, the EMA has to look at. That's their job. Even one case in 10 million they'd examine for anything, you know, because it's their job to protect us, you see. So now that we have these six cases, the FDA have made their decision. It's absolutely appropriate that the EMA would now look at this closely, you see, just to make sure and satisfy their own minds as to what's going on, you know. So there's nothing untoward here. And then we're waiting for the EMA now to give a statement on it, which will come soon based on their analysis.
Finally, What do you do about vaccine hesitancy? Because the more people talk about these rare, and they are rare, blood clot events, even so, the more people are worried about them and have questions about them. What happens then in terms of if it is finally rolled out, and more people say, I'm not sure about that one? What do you do?
All we can do is reassure them, Cormac, and show the data. I mean, the good news is the data is there now. I mean, can you imagine 6 people out of 6.8 million have been affected by the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? That's extremely low. We know if you're over 50 or over 60, you have a reasonable risk of developing severe disease. I think 18% of people over 70 will die from this virus, you know. So you weigh the risks and say to people, look, you weigh them yourself. And if you're weighing them in the right way, at least in terms of scientifically, you'll say, well, I'll take that vaccine. That's all you can do. Secondly, talk to your GP. They're the best people to reassure you. Any fear at all, give your GP a ring and they'll give you the facts and reassure you.
Okay, look, we'll leave it there. We'll talk about this a little bit more, I'm sure. But Luke O'Neill, thank you very much indeed. And beforehand, Stefan de Keersmaeker from the European Commission. We'll take a break.